Your book sold, which has helped so many young people, youth, teenagers, is now one of the most banned books in the U.S. For the school year 2022 to 2023, it is the most banned book in the U.S. Give us a little bit of your feeling about book banning and what harm we are doing to these children.
You know, we are cutting them off from the world. There are aspects of the world that none of us like, but kids crave to know about it. They crave to know about their peers on the other side of the world, for instance. A lot of the kids who read sold so many classrooms, then did some kind of a fundraising project and took action on behalf of kids who had been trafficked.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
I'm Patty McCormick, and welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Before we get started, Patricia, I thought you should know that this podcast is banned. Patty, I am so happy that you could take the time to be with me here today, and I think the listeners are going to really be interested in what we're going to be talking about. You're an author, you're a journalist, and your novels have, they're based, a lot of them, on real people. And I want to get into that in just a little bit. But first, I'd like to go over how you became a writer, because I read somewhere that you started writing in second grade.
Yes, really dreadful things in second grade, poetry and plays and things like that. But I was a kind of a lonely kid and spent a lot of time, locked out of my house. My mother was maybe not the most stable person, and she needed me to be gone a lot during my childhood. So I amused myself first by just making up stories. And then later I found a spot above our garage, a little attic spot, and I turned it into my own writing studio. And I think I've always written both to kind of leave this world and go to another place that's a little better or different or something like that, but also just to figure out who I am.
Well, I believe that is always a work in progress. And you write children's books. You've written Cut. And in that book is a young woman who is harming herself. You've written Never Fall Down, and that's based on a true story of a young man going through genocide, and who you actually interviewed. You've written Sold back in 2006, which was about child sex trafficking, and you went to India and went into brothels and interviewed some of the moms and so on. What I really want to get down to right off the bat is that you write children's books, but when somebody asks you what the children's books are about, instead of my saying it, why don't you describe this topics that you write on?
So people will often say, oh, you write children's books. That's adorable. And I think they're expecting unicorns and puppies. And I write for young adult readers, which is, the upper end of the middle school range and high schoolers. And these are books that have social justice topics, deep psychological issues. And I feel like those kids are deserving of challenging books. They're deserving of the private life that a book gives you and the sovereignty to read what they want to read. They need those books. I'm also very aware that I'm writing for other people's children. So I take care not to include language that is offensive or graphic, because the book is tough enough. The story is tough enough without using graphic language. And I also think that the kids that I'm writing about are undergoing enormous trauma. And while it is incredibly difficult, they wouldn't use graphic language either. They would talk about the fear and the confusion and the betrayal that they're experiencing.
And when you've interviewed some of the children who wound up being characters in your books, you didn't just ask them surface questions.
Yes.
How tough was that? And how did they take it when you asked them the hardest questions?
They wanted to be asked. And you're right. We spent a lot of time establishing the trust that it would take to go into those deeper areas. The girls that I interviewed who were self-injuring had been doing it in secret and felt very misunderstood and wanted to be understood, wanted to be heard, wanted their stories out there, partly to ease the loneliness and partly they're now in recovery so that they could communicate with other kids who are struggling. The girls in the brothels were touched and amazed and confused that an American would be interested in their stories. And I think moved that somebody from the other side of the world wanted to bring their story out into the public. Same thing with the people in Cambodia who had experienced genocide. There was so much shame and so much silence around it. Shame because people did, things that they would never do in an ordinary life. They did to survive. They needed to get those things out and off their chests and felt enormous healing by doing so.
Now, you've gone into schools and given talks and discussions where children have been able to ask questions and talk to you. Have they been horrified or have they been interactive? Have they been open and wanting to talk?
So open. When CUT first came out, there would always be one kid who would come up to me at the end of the session to say that he or she was self-injuring. And that gave the adults in their lives the chance to know what was going on and to help get them care. So I would say, it's so important that you told me, and now the next step is for you or for us together to tell someone else so that you can get the support that you need. With SOLD, so many kids come forward and say that they've had non-consensual sexual experiences and that the book triggered something in them to see, this is harm to me. And I don't have to suffer with it in silence. I can talk about it. And they will often stand up in class and say, my uncle did something to me, or I'm having a bad experience at home right now, or, a boyfriend. And again, their classmates are incredibly empathetic. I kind of brace every time that happens, thinking that the other kids in the class are going to react poorly. Every single time they're classmates have reacted with love and concern and compassion. And so those kids are able to get the help that they need.
So your books, including SOLD, has helped so many young adults, youth, to be able to say, I'm not alone, to be able to voice what has been silent in their head forever. You've given them the opportunity to know that not only are they not alone, but they're not at fault. Which is huge, because especially in today's day and age with the statistics of the mental health crisis that youth is going through, it's an epidemic and it's a crisis. So your books have helped so many young adults. And it's been, I mean, what a thing to be able to say you've done, but to also observe, to see it, to be there as it's happening.
You know, you make such an important point about the way kids blame themselves. And that's an automatic default in the thinking of young people, maybe in the thinking of a lot of us, but that they've done something wrong. And inside the closed loop of their heads, it's their fault, it's their fault, it's their fault. They read something about another character and they see, oh, this is an innocent child. It's not her fault. And it breaks that echo chamber that is really so so destructive and such a shame to suffer with that kind of thinking.
And, you know, one of the things is that, you know, books are in libraries, they're in libraries and schools. And you were asked what role the school library plays. And that was back in 2017. And what was your answer back then?
Oh my gosh, I don't remember. Do you have it in front of you? Yes. To me, it's like it's the Switzerland of the school. Is that what I said?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Ding, ding.
A safe place, a safe library, especially a school library. It's a safe place. They can go and they can read, they can choose, they can, until recently. Your book sold, which has helped so many young people, youth, teenagers, is now one of the most banned books in the U.S. For the school year 2022 to 2023, it is the most banned book in the U.S. Give us a little bit of your feeling about book banning and what harm we are doing to these children.
You know, we are cutting them off from the world. There are aspects of the world that none of us like, but kids crave to know about it. They crave to know about their peers on the other side of the world, for instance. A lot of the kids who read sold so many classrooms, then did some kind of a fundraising project and took action on behalf of kids who had been trafficked. So we're also cutting them off from opportunities for altruism and empathy. We're being awfully disrespectful toward them. You know, people who are in the fight here will say it's parental rights and they want to protect children from material that isn't appropriate for them. They will choose what's appropriate and not. I've never found a kid reach for a book, one of my books in particular, that they weren't ready for. Or if they do, they put it back. It's not right for them. They know. And I think we have to allow kids to develop that sense of judgment about what's right for them and what's not. And for goodness sake, there's so much worse on the internet and in video games. The poor books are really taking it on the chin.
Well, one of the things that I want to be very specific about is you do not use graphic language. You do not, I mean, you're not, in fact, a parent in Virginia said the scene she chose informed part of your own sexual abuse. And it describes the assault of a 13-year-old by an older man. There's no graphic language, obscenity in the passage. The story is told for the point of view of a child, in the words of a child, and conveys her confusion, terror, and physical pain. To not allow a child to read that, we're not, and to call that pornography?
Yeah, that really is so offensive to me. That's not pornography, that's rape. That's not pornography, that's childhood sexual abuse. If you think that's pornography, I don't know what to say to you.
It's, as you said, it's doing such harm to these children and not allowing them to see that there are other people to read, safe, read about other people who they can associate themselves with, they can say, oh, wow, I'm not alone.
And, you know, my book has been around for quite some time. It's curious to me why it's suddenly become so of interest to the people who want to ban books. But the other books that are being banned are about the experiences of children of color,
right?
LGBTQ youth. You cannot erase those experiences on the guise that it's protecting a child. You're erasing that child's experience. You're cutting off his opportunity or her opportunity or their opportunity to see themselves.
We're talking about books right now and the harm that it is doing to all of these children who are having enough of a problem with mental health crises, whether it be eating disorders, anxiety. We're not allowing them to open up their world to, you know, all they have to do is turn the TV on and they get more from the news than from what you're talking about, which are real stories in a book that has no graphic language, no sexual, I mean, just being told from a child's point of view.
And I think to take in that information slowly, privately, in the considered language of a book, the carefully considered language. I mean, of course, I have editors and other people helping me to make sure that it is child appropriate. That's how we form opinions. That's how these kids are going to understand the world.
Tell me about watching Netherland and Game of Thrones. Tell me how you compare those two to the people who will not watch Netherlands, which is about the Michael Jackson debacle and his, you know, abuse of where he's been accused of abusing and being a pedophile. So I'd like to hear how you talk to people about having to watch Netherland and what their excuses are for not.
Before we go to that topic, I just want to say one last thing about banned books, and that is the people whose voices are being left out are the voices of the kids.
Yes.
People who really, really need support are the teachers, the librarians, and the school board officials who are trying to fight book banning. And, you know, I'm very remote from the experience of having a banned book. It's not like I'm going to go to the grocery store and run into the parent who banned the book, but the librarian is, and the fourth grade teacher is. So I think we need to really rally around them.
Well, the reason why I mentioned that in between is because when you talk about the reasons that people give you for not watching it, it's almost like the reasons why people are banning some of the books as if they don't want, you know, they're so afraid of what a child might find out.
So for me, Game of Thrones glorified rape. It was a rape culture movie. And the rape scenes, I actually did not watch it. Somebody in my house was watching it and I could hear it. And I found it really upsetting. It glorifies violence, sexual violence. Leaving Neverland is a true story about boys who survived childhood sexual abuse. Why do we want to glory in or celebrate these stories that are so violent, and violent in particular toward women and children, and avoid the things, the real life stories? I guess because it's really hard to face. It's really hard to face that this is happening to kids. But I feel like you, as a viewer, I was kind of jumping on my friends and saying, you really need to look at this video. Don't look away. That's so unfair to the kids, the young men who went so deep into themselves and had so much courage to talk about what happened to them.
Well, the children in your book, the characters in your book, have the courage to talk to you. And the children in the schools have the courage to talk to you. And for some reason that people are so afraid that children might actually, one, start realizing they're not alone, and two, realize that, you know what, this world is really a tough place, and maybe they don't have to navigate it by themselves. And as you're talking about, the librarians and the teachers are now being put in this awful dilemma.
Yeah. You know, all the characters in the books take positive steps on their own to reclaim their lives. These are not gloom and doom books. They're about very tough topics, but each of them has a hopeful ending. And I think that's important to remember too, that it shows the way out of a dark place.
And, you know, that's what children need.
Yeah.
Especially the age group that you are, that you're out there for, that your books are there for. So how do we, you know, you wrote the article in the New York Times, you know, my book is horrifying, my book is a lifeline, and it is, and my book is banned. Where do we go from here? How do we, I know how we, you know, fighting it back is buying the books and making sure that, you know, people are able to read them. But, you know, with everything going on, how do children even, how do they cope with the fact that these books are being banned, that they're not allowed to read?
You know, probably you remember as well as I do, when you're told that you can't have something or you can't do something when you're a kid, that makes it all the more appealing. So I think it's going to really backfire. But kids are, you know, what am I trying to say here? They are coming up with workarounds. You know, there are lots of ways to download a banned book via your public library, and it can be on your phone, it can be on your laptop, it can be on your Kindle, and nobody needs to know that you're reading that book.
Okay. I just, you know, the world we live in is just amazing, where people can just make decisions for us, or try to make decisions for us, which they shouldn't be. Yes, parents should have a right to parental rights, but schools should also have a right, and teachers and librarians. As you said, the library you called Switzerland, it was a safe place. Do you still go into schools and talk, or is that...
That stopped a lot during the pandemic. I did it via Zoom. But your point is a good one, that parents, well, a lot of the people who are trying to ban these books are not parents at all. They're following the agenda of something called Moms for Liberty, that you can just, you know, download from the internet and march it into your school board meeting. I do understand, as a parent, the discomfort that you might have with your kids reading books that are going to introduce them to challenging realities. I remember when my daughter went upstairs to read Judy Blume's Forever, and I thought, okay, here we go. But I'd much rather have her in Judy Blume's hands than pretty much anybody else. But you cannot legislate for everyone else. You may want to restrict what your child does or sees or reads, but you don't have the right to inflict those views on anyone else. And the law covers teachers and librarians using difficult material when it is in service of some kind of lesson. So even AI knows this. There was a librarian or a curriculum developer in Iowa who was told she had to review all the books in the school system and pull out those that offended or broke a state law that says you can't have a sex act in a book that's in a school library. So she typed in ChatGPT the parameters of the law and then put in my book. And within minutes, AI said, yes, this contains a scene of childhood sexual assault. It is not written in graphic or offensive language. it is in service of illuminating a pressing social problem. And if you are concerned about your child reading it, you should talk to him or her. That's what AI says. There are ways in which AI is smarter than some of these people at the school board meetings. And I do think that's another issue. I'm kind of not answering. I'm answering a question ago, but we need to go to those school board meetings. They are, you know, they can be deadly boring, but I think the noisy people, the few noisy people who show up can be really intimidating, and they need to be met by the many of us for a civil conversation, but to show and see that there are people in favor of children's right to read.
Which you don't see a lot of, because the people who go in to say this book needs to be banned, the minute you start talking on the other side, they get rambunctious. They're yelling. Because they've come in with an agenda, and their ears are closed to anything else.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're not going to change their minds, but our school boards, are, you know, elected officials are supposed to represent us. And some of them have been stacked with book banning proponents, but some of them aren't. And if they see that voters support the kids' right to read, my hope is that they would be responsive to that.
It's a very scary world we live in right now. Scary for the youth, and for the teachers and librarians, because, yeah, you know, all these laws that are trying to be passed or have been passed, and, you know, the vagueness. So they're in a quandary as to what to do. And as we talked about before, it's only hurting the children.
Yeah, the librarians are in an impossible situation. As you said, the standards are unclear, so they don't quite know what they can bring in, what they can't. Same thing with teachers. The laws as they are written threaten them with their jobs if they have offending material in their classrooms and in their libraries, even if they don't know, you know, they're not trying to follow some kind of list of things that are it's so unclear, you don't know that what you have could cost you your job. And so what happens is that teachers and librarians are going to be tempted just not to bring in anything that's going to ruffle any feathers. It's a chilling effect. It's a kind of quiet self-censorship, because they are legitimately afraid. There are people who've gotten fired over this. There are people who have said, no, I'm not going to do it, and have gotten fired. So, yeah, like you said, it's a scary world. We need to support those people who are right on the front line and not allow that kind of intimidation to happen.
And it starts at the local level. That's what people don't understand. It's like making a difference. You can just turn around and go across the street and you can make a difference. It doesn't have to be on a huge national level, because you have to start where it's starting to boil, which is in all the local communities.
Yeah, and I think there's a way in which we often feel so hopeless. Oh, it's futile. You know, I just can't.
It's not.
It's not. And I think what you're saying is, it's local. You know, just go to a school board meeting one night. You're going to feel so effective. And I think that's better than feeling powerless.
It definitely is. What would you say to the, let's talk to the teachers and the librarians out there. What advice or encouragement could you leave them with?
You know, I always say thank you. When I'm invited to a classroom, and I say, and I to the kids, I'm so grateful that your teacher brought this book into the room, because there are a lot of teachers who wouldn't or who can't. So let's acknowledge the commitment that your teacher has to broadening your worldview. And let's acknowledge that this is a risky thing that they've done. This was well before book banning. So What can we do for our teachers and librarians? I think, it boils down to showing up, writing letters, even writing a letter of support to your local librarian, your school librarian, your child's teacher. It is such a hard and thankless job. And to hear from the parents and the community members who are affected by this, to hear, yes, we believe in the work that you're doing, we support you, can really make a difference, I think.
Well, I think you're right. And it's going to take us all really being involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Locally. Mm-hmm. See what's going around in our own neighborhood, because we're doing such a disservice to our children.
There's a really cool technology company. It's like it's called the Digital Public Library of America, and they use geolocation to find out. Their app suggests you put in your zip code, and it will show you which books are banned in your community, and they will send that book to you electronically, so you never have to encounter anybody at the library or the school.
That's fantastic.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Patty, thank you so much. Your books are something that children, youth, young adults need to read, should read. It, as you said, it's opened a world for them. They're not alone. Well, Where can people find out more about you and your books?
The books are available on Amazon and every other place that books are sold. And my website is just my name, pattymccormick.com. And, you know, I just want to throw in one last thing, and that is a lot of adults have read these books and have said, gosh, I didn't know about the genocide in Cambodia. Or I didn't know about trafficking. Or parents who will say, oh, my daughter was self-injuring. And once I read that book, I had a much better understanding of what she was going through. So, you know, they're for all of us, these books.
I do believe they are. I believe that with children's illustrated books also. And there are some parents who that's all they could read and understand. And in four pages, all of a sudden it clicks.
Yes.
So, Patty, again, thank you so much for taking the time. This is so important. Your books are great. And this banning of books, it's got to stop at some point. So, Patty, I thank you.
This opportunity to reach more people to talk about it. I really loved our conversation. Thanks, Sylvia.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.